When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is the Talking Tactics Podcast. My name is Daniel. Cool guest this week. We got A1 in. He's a previous guest. How you doing, bro?
What's good? What's good, man? I'm all good, man. How are you?
I'm all right. Where can people find you on Twitter or online before we start?
It's Auds First. So AUDZ1ST.
Who do you support?
It's for Arsenal.
All right, let's just get that out the way now. So you can follow us. You can follow us, Talking Tactics, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. If you're listening on SoundCloud, appreciate it. If you're on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, it's free. Leave us a 5-star review or read it on the show. If you're on Spotify, give us a follow. We got a Patreon, so Half Hope and I will come up with some time in the week and we'll record something. So yeah, check that out. $3 a month. Bless us for Christmas, Thanksgiving, whatever it is. All right. Obvious place to start. So we're going to start there. Manchester United sacked their manager.
They finally done it.
How deep is your fanhood of Arsenal that can you put away the kind of sadness that exists? Because as rival fans, we're like, damn, I wish he would have stayed. But on the other hand, as like football people, we could look at it in a sense of like, that is the right decision ultimately. So where do you kind of split yourself on that one?
I'm in the middle, man, because obviously, we've got the banter between Man United fans and Arsenal fans. And you know, Ollie, obviously, he gave us rival fans good moments. You know what I'm saying? You know, from the other day, you know, they got beat by Watford 4-1. You know, they got beat by Leicester. Two teams, obviously, as an Arsenal fan, when we beat Leicester and Watford, they'll be like, oh, it's only Watford and Leicester. And, you know, they've gone on and lost to them. So, on a footballing that level, yeah, he had to go. He should have went a long time ago, especially if like you had a manager like Antonio Conte, who I thought was going to go to Man United, but they didn't sack Ollie, and he ended up going to Tottenham. So Man United right now, you could say they're in a little bit of a, you know, sticky situation in terms of who they're going to get. They need, you know, an actual manager, because with the team that they got and what they're trying to do, you can't have the interim manager for long. So whether they get the actual manager now or get in the summer, they're in a sticky situation. But in football, in terms with Ollie, he had to go. You know, he wasn't, you know, reaching the standard.
Did you watch the Watford game?
I watched the highlights of it. I remember just walking, I see on my phone, it's like, oh, 3-1. Then I see, oh, it's 4-1. In 90 minutes, they scored 2 goals in 90 minutes, Watford. That's very good.
Yeah. I said that's very good.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
I was thinking like, if it was 2-1, you shouldn't lose that game. It still would have been trouble. But to concede 2 in like 90, I don't know the exact minutes, but
after
post 90 minutes, the score 4-1 against Watford, it looks too bad.
Yeah.
But I think I saw on The Athletic, he knew he was going to be sacked at halftime.
Wow. Oh, yeah. I didn't.
I'm like, I don't know how you know that, Athletic, but okay. if they turn it around or whatever
the case may be. Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah. And then, like, as soon as the match ended, it was just Ollie's out. He's going to be sacked. Everybody had the link to whatever was going to happen. So if you are going to sack him, I don't understand why you don't do it after 5-0 against Liverpool.
Yeah.
At this point, you're punting the season, at least in my opinion. You're giving up on the season being anything relevant. The only legitimate options that Manchester United had, like a top 7 manager in the world, was Antonio Conte. He was the only one who was available that wasn't already under contract, meaning Ollie. If you sack him after you lose 5-0, which would have been perfectly acceptable, he gets the game against Spurs. There's a Champions League game, okay. But then there's like an international break to come.
Yeah.
But because they let it go that extra week and Nuno was already under pressure, Nuno goes. And now a London club has opened up for a manager who previously managed in London. Maybe they thought they would just lose against Spurs. That'll just give us even more of a reason to do it. But you're not going to get Pochettino out of PSG midseason.
Yeah.
Because PSG aren't silly. Who are they going to get? Unless they have some magical plan that they can get Marseille, Bordeaux, Zidane to go to PSG. If they can pull that off with money or incentives or just make him forget where he's from. If they can do that, then cool. But that's really the only other out that they have. It's not going to be easy to get him to leave PSG if we're talking about Pochettino. Ten Hag has been rumored to leave Ajax. Every major sacking, like when Bayern sacked, who did they sack midseason before they got Fleck? Was it Kovac?
Yeah, Kovac. Yeah.
It was, they're going to get Ten Hag. When Koeman left Barcelona, they looked at Ten Hag. If he's not going to leave Ajax for Barcelona, why would he leave them for Manchester United midseason? Yeah. It doesn't make sense.
And what he's doing with Ajax right now, like, he's doing good. They're in the Champions.
Yeah, they're title contenders. You wouldn't leave a title contender team. Like, that's a trophy on the table.
They're doing good in the Champions League where, you know, that's a competition where how Ten Hag's team play, like, on a bigger, like, platform. And he's done a very good job. So, like, obviously he has love for that club, Ajax. So I don't see him leaving, you know, midway.
So the only real option was Antonio Conte, if we're looking at just elite managers who weren't employed. Now your options are Laurent Blanc.
Yeah, he's been, I think, where is he? I don't know.
Valverde's there, Favre's there. I mean, there's a bunch of guys who are there, but they're not standout names to where Manchester United should be hiring them for some long-term thing. So now it's kind of where, when Mourinho left and they brought in Ole, it's kind of like that, where Carrick is now the new Ole, or Darren Fletcher plus Carrick, however they want to put it together. They are going to beat Chelsea on the weekend. I just know it.
You think they're going to beat Chelsea on the weekend? Wow.
It's the most obvious football thing that's going to happen. Maybe it's so obvious that it won't happen, but you sack the manager, there's no Harry Maguire, Chelsea are top of the table, blah, blah, blah. As watching Chelsea for years and years. I don't know how it's going to happen, but something bad is going to happen. I can just feel it. There's just something in me that's like, Chelsea aren't going to win.
It'll be a solid win for Chelsea, and it'll be like,
I know what's to be expected. Trust me. I don't think it's going to go well. Now, maybe this is me doing my own little bit of reverse psychology, but we can leave that to the sideline. I just have a feeling. So imagine they beat Chelsea. Do you remember the PSG game?
Yeah, PSG game.
Rashford beats Buffon. Then we get this whole gas from Rio and all the other. You know, sign the contract.
Sign the contract. Put it on the table. Sign the contract. Give him what he wants.
It could go left very quickly at Man United because they one or two or three good results. And it's, oh, Carrick, he's one of us. He's. I worry that just stick to the plan. Ollie would have been okay if he just finished that season.
Yeah.
But then they just gave him the job. And now this is what, 2.5 years later?
Yeah.
I just think it was poor, poor planning. If you're going to get rid of somebody, get rid of them at the right time.
Yep.
So Chelsea got rid of Lampard, I think, a little bit too late, but eventually they got him within the correct window of time.
Yeah.
To where you give Tuchel at least enough time that season to get something in place. And you end up winning a Champions League, which is quite lucky and fluky, but half of a season to install some form of a system to where now the 2020, 2021, or 21-22 season, you can actually do something.
Yeah.
And Chelsea are top of the table. I think this season, if you're not going to hire the guy who's going to be the guy next season, then the guy starts off next season behind the projects that are already above United anyway. So, and today I saw that Woodward might stay. I know he was scheduled to leave in February.
Yeah.
Now they're like, I think we still might need this guy because there's uncertainty, blah, blah, blah. So the place is a mess. I haven't looked at their stock price. Actually, Man United stock price, because this is all these guys care about. Finance.yahoo.com. Okay, they went up like 30 cents. I know that's all the Glazers care about. Like, how's our stock price doing? Do Arsenal have stock? It seems like something the Cronkies would do.
I wouldn't be surprised, Vanessa. I would not be surprised.
Would you buy if you had money? Like, would you buy shares in Arsenal? Like, if they offered, like, yo, it's like $5 a share or something like that. No disrespect, but I'm just coming up with a number.
Yeah,
so let's say it's like, this is $5 a share. You have like $100. Would you get like 20 shares of Arsenal, or is it not that deep for you?
It's not really. Not really that deep, really, man. That's, yeah.
I said, it's not that deep. Yeah, I would never buy Chelsea stock. Never. The stock I have, I want to sell, and it's not even real. So, now, okay, names. Like, who do we think is going to be the guy? Oof. So we've heard Zidane. Guys, that's not happening. Pochettino, I think that could happen in the offseason. Ten Hag, we've already mentioned. Is there any outsider name? Like, okay, Brendan Rodgers, perhaps? Like, who's the right name?
If Ten Hag was oncoming, yeah, I'll be like, yep, Ten Hag, let's go.
Would you take him at Arsenal?
Yeah, I'll take him at Arsenal. Like, you know, obviously my opinions with like me and the manager in terms of like him being a club, not me trying to be negative, just me and my opinion. I just feel he's not the right guy to, you know, take us up a level. Whereas I'll have Ten Hag at Arsenal. You know, I've seen what he's done, especially with a young team as well, which the model Arsenal are trying to follow right now. So I could see him doing things with us as well, plus his experience as well. So, yeah, I'll definitely take him at Arsenal. He's a quality manager.
Are you one who thinks that Arteta won? If you look at the kind of the Ollie Lampard Arteta sweepstakes, not sweepstakes, but you know, rivalry, the supposed rivalry that was there. Like, do you think Arteta won, or do you think Arsenal had just like the least expectations out of those three? So it makes sense that their manager lasts longer.
I think of it from that two ways. Obviously, between them three, Ollie Lampard and Arteta, Arteta won because he didn't get sacked. But looking at it from club point of view, it's just, I just see Arsenal, you know, taking the L because they're not reacting to what's going on, like when Arsenal have been doing poorly. Whereas, you know, Man United, even though it took them long, they had enough and they finally done it. You know, Chelsea, that's a club that don't play games. If you're not performing, you're out the door. So, yeah, from club-wise, you know, Arsenal, you know, we haven't won. But Arteta, yeah, he's won. Has it been sacked? I don't really look into that too tough.
You know what else you guys won, low-key? The Lukaku, Morata, Lacazette thing. Now, that was a sweepstakes. And you could say Arsenal won because Lacazette's still there, right?
Yeah.
But is that winning? I don't think it's winning. I just think, like, Arsenal are just a weird place to where, like, you guys are long-suffering. You guys are willing to put up with more nonsense than other people.
Yeah, because someone like Lacazette, that would do like the money he cost, obviously, he came from France where he scored a lot of goals in France. Came over with the money, you know, with that record. And he hasn't really lived up to it, especially for Arsenal. Like, I'm seeing him, he's putting up numbers, not as much numbers as like Giroud when Giroud was here. And, you know, Giroud, most of the time, he got slated and whatnot. Obviously, there was that times where he was missing loads of important chances. Then when you compare him to, like, Lacazette, he hasn't done much better, in my personal opinion, especially for the amount of money that we got him for. We had got him in the summer. Then in January, we got Aubameyang. And it's just like, was that a sign where we spent money on the wrong guy, we had to get an actual, like, proper good striker? Or was it a thing we're trying to change up system, play with two strikers? What? Arsene Wenger didn't play with two strikers, only one striker. And when Aubameyang came, he started playing more than Lacazette. And he got more goals than Lacazette, or similar amount of goals. I can't remember how much. But I just remember Aubameyang scored 10 or 11 goals within half of the season. Yeah, so
I don't know why it's always Arsenal United and Chelsea that have these things.
It's just like,
yo, who won? Who won? Who got the better? Like, who won? So, yeah, I'm looking up Lacazette's statistics. Like, he hasn't scored 20 goals in a season, all competitions. 17, 19, 12, 17. Which isn't terrible.
Isn't terrible, but for the price, awesome.
Yeah, like 17 goals in 39 games, 19 goals in 49 games, 12 goals in 39, 17 in 43. This season, he has 3-9. In the Premier League, you know, 14, 13, 10, 13. So double digits every year. But I guess if you're spending that much money, you want closer to 20.
Yeah.
So he hasn't been bad. And I'm sure if you look at some of those appearances, they're not all starts. Some of them are like, you know, he came on for 3 minutes, or he's playing number 10, or he's on the wing, or whatever the case may be. So I don't think he's been a bad signing. He just hasn't been
he hasn't lived up to the guy. Yeah, he just hasn't lived up to the price tag in my
personal. Yeah. Was it 40 million?
I think it might have been 50 million, I think.
Oh, Leon disclosed the fee was an initial 53 million euros, so 46.5 million, plus up to 7 in potential bonuses. So if they paid the whole thing, 52 and some change, A1 knows Arsenal.
But, you know, but he's had his good moments, but yeah, that's my opinion on him.
You could claim he won. Yeah. Still, just based on longevity.
Yeah.
Because Morata, trash. Lukaku had the 2 seasons. He wasn't bad, but...
But it just didn't work out for him.
He was even more money.
So. And I think, you know, the transfer, the initial transfer wasn't it Mourinho wanted Morata at Man United and Conte wanted Lukaku at Chelsea, but...
I think they both wanted Lukaku, if I'm honest with you.
Oh, you think so? But Morata did start... I remember Morata dying his hair because... Red, because he thought, yeah, he's going to Jose Mourinho. I think them two have worked together at Real Madrid as well, so that's why
I think they both wanted Lukaku. and the Manchester United were willing to play ball with Raiola, and Lukaku was boys with Pogba, and they went to LA and they were in the Airbnb or however rich people rent out mansions in Los Angeles, and they just decided, let's join. Then Chelsea got stuck, because I think he signed first, and then Chelsea got Morata rather. So let's just not even get into that, because that's just bad. How they got the money back, shout out to Marina. But this is slightly uncomfortable, but while we're here, we need to discuss 4-0, bro. Really?
Oh, man.
Why are you laughing? It's not funny. Like,
I'm just laughing because... It's like kind of I expected it, because every time we go Anfield, Liverpool are not a team that will just wear you down. They're a team that will just go straight through you, and it seems like that's what they do. I think the way we started off, we're trying to hang in there, if you get what I'm saying. And, you know, we did hang in there, but at the same time, we didn't create chances going forward, which I personally feel like for Arsenal, like our midfield and like attacking is just... It's a problem right now. We are not creating as much, you know, and we're not scoring as much as well, because, you know, I saw a stat. We have got 7 goals from open play this season, which is very, very bad considering a team like Arsenal.
7?
Yeah, 7.
Damn. That's not good, man.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good.
Especially you guys have scored 17 goals. No, that's against... 13 goals for, 17 against, and you're 5th.
Yeah.
You've conceded more than you've scored. You have a -4 goal difference, and you're 5th in the table. That's good.
Yeah.
Because eventually you would think it'll come around. But those 4 goals are obviously the ones that you conceded against Liverpool. So you had an even goal difference until a couple of days ago. That's not too bad.
Not too bad, but yeah.
It's not great, though. Like, 13 goals for is not fantastic. But that kind of goes to the Lacazette point. Like, who are the goal scorers?
Yeah.
And it's not like Chelsea, where you guys get goals from defenders and things like that. So if Aubameyang's not getting 30 goals a season, where are your goals coming from?
That's something that we can't figure out. Like what you said with Chelsea, they haven't got Lukaku. Even when Lukaku was there, he wasn't really on form. And Chelsea somehow managed to get goals, and they get goals from everywhere. Wing-backs, midfielders, you know, false nines, defenders. You saw Kante the other day just scoring. Then Rudiger.
Don't say it like that.
Well.
Even Kante.
Yeah, but like, you know, it's Kante. Obviously, when you listen, when you watch Kante, he's a great footballer, but, you know, it's just from time to time, it seems like he gets that goal, especially at Leicester as well. I'm pretty sure he scored against Leicester a couple of seasons ago away. And, you know, with Chelsea, you just get goals from everywhere. But with Arsenal, I can't see where the goal's coming from at most of the times. So, you know what I'm saying? But
7 from Aubameyang, 5 from Smith Rowe, 3 from Lacazette, 2 from Nketiah, 2 from Saka, and then Pepe, Chambers, Partey, Gabriel, and Odegaard have popped up with 1. So if you project over 14 games, so let's say how many more games will you play from 14? Like 4? Like 4 times that? Are you saying Smith Rowe is going to give you 20 goals in the season? Is that unrealistic, or do you think that's real?
If he does it, he'll be flipping amazing. But
can he keep that pace is basically what I'm asking. Like, can he get 20 goals in all comps? I think that's asking a bit too much. Aubameyang getting 30 goals in all comps, that's realistic. But Smith Rowe, I'm like, that's a bit much. So, again, where are these other goals coming from if Pepe's only getting you 1 and 9, Saka's getting you 2 and 14, and Nketiah's only playing like cup games, I guess. So that's where his goals are coming from. We already have the Lacazette deal. So who's helping Aubameyang? If it's not Smith Rowe, or Smith Rowe can't keep the pace, then in games against Liverpool, who's the danger? It's just one guy.
One guy, and again with that as well, especially against Liverpool, I've seen like other teams go to Liverpool, like create a few like goal scoring chances. Maybe it's, you know, like warning Liverpool, like, yo, like we're here, and Liverpool were like, all right, cool, like you guys need to like fix up. Like, as we saw with Brighton, when they're beating Brighton 2-0 and Brighton not come back and it's 2-2. Again, with Arsenal, I just don't see that with us, with our attack, with our midfield as well. So it's very, very hard to tell, you know, where the goals are going to come from, because even with Smith Rowe, the form that he's on right now, it's a good form. But he's a young player as well, and this is his first full season. He might, you know, gas out like towards like the end of the season compared to if it was like fully developed, where he can go on for longer, like for the whole season. So yeah, I think with Smith Rowe, if we want him to be that guy and get the goals, we also have to like take care of him in terms of like resting. I mean, like, he needs to be rested.
But that's the thing. You can't rest him.
Yeah,
because he has to play, because he's number 2. And even when he's not scoring, you can see he has that thing about him to where he can create for others.
Yeah.
So it's hard to bench him.
People say that they call him the Croden De Bruyne.
Croden De Bruyne. That's funny. What was I going to ask? Liverpool are 4 points behind Chelsea, who are 3 points ahead of Manchester City. So while I have you, who do you think is going to win the league?
Chelsea. Chelsea win the league.
You sound very confident.
Yeah. It's just such a Chelsea thing, like, in terms of, like, when Chelsea win the league, that like, the pattern, they always go through a mad... Well, they get the manager, he does well, then they win the league, then, like, he messes up next season or gets into problems, then leaves, then Chelsea go for a little rebuilding stage, get a manager, same thing happens, and win the league again. I think it's got that period as well with Chelsea. It's got to appear. But you guys like took
it. Now that you mentioned it, that is how it goes.
That's how it goes.
Like, a manager comes in, spends some money, wins the league, then the next season, except the Mourinho one. He didn't go back to back. But you know, Ancelotti, that happened, Mourinho, that happened, Conte, that happened. So it's a pattern.
And Tuchel's won the Champions League with you guys, so you've got that winning mentality and toughness. You've beaten big teams, and it's that season right now where maybe you'll be top of the. I think you'll be top of the league like for a while. Solid.
What do you mean you?
But Chelsea.
I'm kidding.
I know you're a complicated Chelsea fan. I don't know. What is with that Tuchel and Chelsea is just like you guys rotate a lot and. Every player that comes in does not look like out of place. Only maybe one or two that Saul, I was a little bit surprised because that's a player that I like in terms of I've seen him in the Champions League and get the big goals, big performances. And I thought, okay.
He scored 1 goal against Bayern. Again, now people get gas.
I'm pretty sure he scored against Barcelona as well. But yeah, he's a big game player. But when I've seen him in the Premier League, I was like, wow. Things are looking bad, but apart from that,
dusted. He might be dusted.
And imagine if that's at another club, that's just the player or the marquee player, if you want to.
He wasn't even on the bench yesterday or
2 days ago. At another club, that would be very, very big, like in terms of like you just basically wasted our time on a player. But whereas at Chelsea, you've got a replacement and you know he's doing good, whether it be Kante, Loftus-Cheek, he's doing very well as well, Hudson-Odoi. He's doing very well as well. And even like Reece James as well. Like, Reece James is like, even though I've rated him before, but he's becoming more complete, adding like a lot more assists to his game and getting goals as well. Chelsea, they're going to win the league.
Just quickly, we will come back to Chelsea, but we're going to put a pin in it. Because something just occurred to me. Should you never buy Atletico Madrid players? Griezmann went to Barcelona, flop. Saúl going to Chelsea, flop. I don't know how you would classify Partey as yet, but it hasn't been fantastic. Yeah, so that's three examples. Don't buy from that club. Morata went to, where did he go? Juventus. From Atletico? Okay, maybe. I mean, he hasn't been totally bad. Who else has left Atletico and just done well?
Godin, when he went to Inter Milan. He did not have a good time at Inter Milan. I think he left.
Nah, man. They're selling people Fugazis.
Yeah, man.
It's Simeone's coaching and that system that makes players look a particular way. But then when they go to a different club, it's like, you can't do what you do there here. And that's an aside. I'm just thinking like, damn, Griezmann, Partey, Saúl. That's three examples.
What about Felipe Luis? Because I think that was a decent...
No, he was good. He was good.
I liked him. I liked him as a player.
Though. It's just Mourinho had
a
loyalty issue with Branislav Ivanovic because he had to play Ivanovic on the right. That meant Azpilicueta had to play on the left, whereas Ivanovic should have been benched. Azpilicueta plays his natural right back, and that opens up the left back spot for Felipe Luis. But you know, there's always exceptions that maybe highlight a rule or color a rule. Felipe Luis is just exceptional. back to Chelsea, though. I did pick them to win the league at the beginning, and I rarely pick Chelsea to win anything. But I've come to a point where it's just like, I don't care that much. So I'm not even going to pretend like my opinion has some sort of juju or magic. It just kind of looked like they were in the best position to win the league because they have a solid defense. They have Lukaku. They have a top five manager in the world, Conte, and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of that time. I didn't really piece together the pattern that you pointed out. But yeah, there's a thing around Chelsea where it feels like it's time. Yeah. Because they haven't won in a while. So the last league they won was 2017.
Conte.
You don't go 4, 5, 6 years at Chelsea without winning a Premier League title. So it does feel like this is that time. Not that it's going to be easy because Manchester City and Liverpool are very good teams.
Yeah.
But the fact, I think Chelsea conceded 4 goals this season.
4 goals this season, yeah.
2 might be from open play.
Yeah. When you're seeing like stats like that, it makes you think like, I'm what, 13 games in?
Yeah, that's one third of a season. Mourinho pace in terms of the goal scoring record or goals against record. So I don't know how long you can maintain that. You play City one time and you could concede, you know, 3, 4, 5. So we'll see how that looks at the end of the season. But I think Chelsea have enough, and that you're doing it without your premier signing or marquee signing in Lukaku. I worry for Lukaku in a sense that if he comes in and Chelsea maybe aren't winning, then people will make the correlation that Lukaku is the problem. So I need him to come in and just score immediately and Chelsea win the games. And it's like, okay, this is the solution. So I do worry in that sense. Werner's back on the bench. That's always a concern. look, Chelsea are a deep team. There's a lack of ego, it seems, to where even if you're on the bench, I'm not hearing, you know, such and such wants to leave or anything like that. I think the players that wanted to leave left, like Zuma, for instance. I think he just wanted to play first team football. Let me go to West Ham.
And he's doing good there.
Zuma. Oh, yeah, of course. Like, he's Zuma. Yeah. Of course he's going to do well. But yeah, like the team just seems like it's happy. Next season, we know the pattern. So enjoy it while it lasts. Because you win the league, they're not going to buy anybody. Tuchel's going to start complaining about transfers and he'll be sacked by February or January, whatever it is. But
and yeah, you know what? Like, I don't know if you saw it. Like, there's a Thomas Tuchel documentary. It's like, what, 13 to 15 minutes and they were going through.
I'm not watching a Tuchel documentary.
Oh, okay, cool.
You think I forgot about the Demba Ba situation with Istanbul Başakşehir in the Champions League? I didn't forget. Yeah. Racism, but let's play. They wanted to walk off the pitch, but he was like, no, let's play, let's play. It's not that big of a deal. Like, I didn't forget.
Yeah.
What was in the documentary?
No, let's obviously talk about his career and how he's on the company, like how he's managing from when he's managing Mainz to Dortmund to PSG. But they were saying that the way towards the end of like his like time at the club, he always gets into problems with someone, like one of the board members. So obviously, I think on Mainz, like he got into problems with like some of the players and whatnot, and he ended up like just leaving. I don't know if he got sacked. I don't know, whatever. Then at Dortmund, he got into problems with the board. Remember when the terrorist attack kind of happened? Was it in Germany? And when Dortmund were playing Monaco, and the team and Tuchel didn't want to play the game. You know, he had people from the board that was telling him no to play the game. So since then, he got into like problems with the board. At PSG, he got into problems with the board as well. Pattern as well with Thomas Tuchel.
It'll come. Yeah, it'll come eventually. It's interesting is Abramovich isn't in England.
All right. Okay.
Like, I think he's banned from the country because of Russia something something. So
wait, where are you guys playing against Juventus? You're playing Juventus. Chelsea are playing Juventus. Is it
on Wednesday? Chelsea, Juventus. I don't have the schedule. It's at Stamford Bridge, I think, tomorrow.
Yeah. I saw a little article apparently saying that Abramovich is going to be there.
Oh. Yeah. So they let him in the country?
Looking that way, if the article's reporting that.
I think the only games he's been able to attend are the ones where, like, Chelsea go to Zenit or something like that.
Yeah.
Or they play somewhere where he can go. So I'm thinking maybe if he doesn't have access to the coach, he can't get on the owner's bad side and vice versa.
Yeah.
If it's just very distant and the only person you're dealing with is the sporting director who's maybe just as powerful as you, maybe slightly a little bit more.
That too, like, if Tuchel gets into problems with the sporting director, that could cause
issues. True, but in the same way, you might side with a coach that's really good over the sporting director. Like, that could happen. The owner's not going to side against himself for the coach. But, you know, sporting director, depending how good the coach is, maybe. And Cech is like a buffer as well. So he's interacted more with Cech than he is with Granovskia. Yeah. But then maybe if Abramovich was around more, sticking his nose in the office, like, who knows what you might say or not say. What else is left in England? What do you make of Sterling? The whole, I think he's reached the end of his time at Manchester City. January, I saw something that I don't know where they're getting the money from, but Barcelona wants Sterling. Maybe it's a loan, but... Okay. Like, what do you think of Sterling?
The situation is weird because, like, a couple of seasons ago, you know, Sterling was, like, City's best player and like, getting the big goals, vital goals. And you know, Sterling managed to, like, rack up, like, a lot of goals this season as well. Like, he's soon to get, I think he's, like, 2 goals away from getting 100th Premier League goal. But Pep's a weirdo, man, because he always has, like, a... like, no offence, but it's just, like... He always has like a little period where he's benching a player who should be benched. Like, so I think right now, so you've got Sterling. Then I think sometimes like Mahrez as well, sometimes Bernardo. Even in the summer, there was reports saying that Bernardo might be one of the players involved if City want to get Harry Kane to offer money and a player's on top. And people were saying Bernardo. There's little reports about Bernardo. It's just an issue with Pep where I think Pep maybe putting Sterling in that little situation or little period that he does with other players as well to see maybe how they respond. But I think Sterling may not be having it this time, if that's true. But
you know, he's been there for 7 years, seven seasons. Like, that's a long time.
That's a very long time.
That's almost double the time he was at Liverpool. So... if it's time to move, it could be time to move. And he does strike me as a player who would end up in Spain somehow. He looks more like a Madrid player than a Barca player, but he does seem like somebody who's headstrong enough. I mean, he was born in Jamaica, so maybe that gives him a little bit of advantage that I know what it's like to live in somewhere that's not England, but maybe that gives him something like, I can leave and I can go to Barca, Madrid, or Atletico, or... I don't know. He just seems like a player that would leave England.
Yeah. I think so.
Probably be happy to leaving, or maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's an interesting one. I would love to talk to him and be like, yo, would you be willing to play in a country that's not England? Because a lot of English players, we know, have that hang up of why would I want to leave?
Yeah.
You know, when you look at some, if you ever look at the World Cup squads and stuff like that, if you look at like Brazil's team, most of the team, like the flags of the clubs that they play for, they're in Europe or Italy. Yeah. Italy's a bit the same, where like there's a lot of Italians that play in Italy.
Yeah.
But the French team is everywhere. The German team, predominantly Germany, but there's a few scattered around. England, it's just always England.
England.
Except there might be like one odd guy, like a Steve McManaman, or who is it this time? Trippier,
Bellingham.
Yeah. Just okay, you got one or two.
Tammy,
but it's all England, you know.
Yeah.
So that's the tendency of the country, is to just stay very close to home in that way, which I think it's a detriment to some. Like while we're on Arsenal, like I always thought Jack Wilshere would have been great if he went to Serie A.
Yeah.
Spanish football might have been a bit too much, I think. Mm-hmm. Italian football would have been perfect, but I think he just wanted to stay in England. Like, that was just his comfort zone, you know? Because you have a family, maybe you don't want to move it, whatever the case may be. But Sterling seems like somebody who I think would leave if a good opportunity came. I'm not saying he's going to go to Getafe or someplace like that. Huesca. Elche. Like, he's not going there. But if Barcelona said, yo, we want a loan, I think that might be a good move. Like, especially if he gets his 100 Premier League goals or whatever it is, which he said, like, I've accomplished what I needed to accomplish. The only thing he hasn't done is win a Champions League. Figure it out somewhere else.
Yeah.
I suspect in a couple of years, he'll be at Newcastle.
Raheem Sterling.
Yeah.
Ooh, Newcastle. Yeah.
If Newcastle are building their project and they want away stars from City, Chelsea, United, that would be a player that you would spend 60 million on, because you think he'd get you 15 goals a season for the next 3, 4, 5 years.
You know, I think he could, yeah. I think he's established himself as a, you know, double figure player in terms of like goal wise, and you know, he gets assists as well. And like, you know, plus his attributes that he's got, yeah. Next few years, I don't see him like slowing down. Maybe he may not get as much, but I always see him as a player who will get double figures
when
it comes to goals.
If he gets the appearances, he'll get the goals.
Yeah.
But the problem this season is he's not getting as many. And if it is, it's like, we'll give you, you know, 20 minutes here to come in and change the game or something like that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he scored, is it this season where he scored a couple times as a sub? He isn't appearance-wise in general in terms of starting, getting 90 minutes or getting like minutes.
These are the last few games that he's played. 78 minutes, 24 minutes, 76, 90, 26, 90, 12, 21, 77, 90. So in the last, is this 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 games, he's completed 90 minutes 3 times.
Oof.
So he's one that's, he's coming off because I think I can change the game, or he's coming on because I think he can change the game, but I'm not starting him necessarily.
Yeah.
Although he did play all 90 minutes against Everton. Like you said, the Cancelo assist was really good. We have a few minutes left. We could go to different countries, and I'll apologize in advance that we're not going to spend too much time in other places. But have you seen the Pele video that's on Twitter?
Yeah, I've seen that Pele video. It's mad. It's not called a Cruyff turn. It's not called a Cruyff turn. It's the Pele turn, man. Because
if we're going to start renaming everything, then if he's done everything, then it's the Pele turn, the Pele roulette, the Pele volley. It's not a bicycle kick, it's the Pele kick. Like, he did everything.
Yeah, he did everything. It's crazy, man. And it's like, and especially on Twitter as well, the way, you know, Pele gets, you know,
slated
a lot, because obviously the when he talks about the amount of goals he scored, like Pele says he scored like 1,000+ goals, and get people saying, yeah, he scored against, you know, in training, he counting them and counting his training goals and the goals, like if you're playing in the park.
He was counting friendly goals.
Yeah. He gets slandered a lot. And obviously, with people saying like the times where he was playing, the people, the players that he was playing against are not, you know, athletic or, you know, quick as the players that are now. But for what, you know, he was doing then, it was amazing. And I could see why, you know, he was like one, well, he was the best player in the world, especially during them times as well, you know, what he must have been going through. Not just that. No.
Yes.
It's true, yes, yeah. Yes, that, yes. Not just on the pitch, off the pitch as well. Off so his pitch, mentality, yes. This, yeah, the mentality was there, him winning World Cups as well for his country. You know, it's like there may be a little few things talking about he didn't win Champions League, but no, you can't talk about that with someone like Pele, because yeah,
he didn't even play in Europe. Like, yeah. How can he win? He won Copa Libertadores, I think.
Yeah, so. But you know how people are now, like especially people on Twitter, is like if you didn't play
Europe, if you didn't win Champions League,
yeah, it doesn't matter.
Even European Cups doesn't count.
Yeah,
he's got to be the Champions League.
Yeah. Oh,
comes to the same one, yeah. So, I think I'd seen some of that video before. Like, it might have been on YouTube. I'm not sure, but like I'd seen something similar to where, but I'd never seen all of those back to back to back. Because yeah. You see, you can go on YouTube and you can find like Pele clips or things like that. Or there's a website that I like. It's called footballia.net.
Yeah, yeah.
And it has all of the old black and white. It's pretty decent quality for black and white, but you can watch the old 1958. Like, you can go back and watch all those World Cup games. And if you watch his first World Cup game, he does some crazy stuff. It's just like, yo, is this guy time traveling? Like, is this somebody from like 1980 or 1970 who's gone back to 1950? Like, he did this one volley that hit the post, and he was 17. So he was just doing things that were just strange, based on what everybody else was doing, to where you get the understanding that if I was born in 1945 and I was a 13-year-old watching that World Cup, what did he just do?
Yeah.
You would have that feeling, and that video kind of captures that Pele is the foundational element of everything that we're seeing
now.
Because you might be able to, like, could he do the croqueta as good as Iniesta? Probably not. But the fact that he did it mean that somebody else did it, to where Iniesta saw it, or at least that was something that could have happened in Iniesta's life. You know what I mean? But if Pele doesn't do that, who's to say that that foundation is there to build upon? Zidane was immaculate at roulettes. Yeah. Who's to say if Pele doesn't do that, then the person who inspired Zidane to do that move, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's the foundational element, seemingly. I don't know who he got his stuff from. Maybe he didn't invent everything that he did. But, like, he's the centerpiece of football. And because of that, I think he's the GOAT. Even if people improved upon what he did, you're a derivative of him, which makes him the GOAT. It has to. No, you were going to say.
Yeah, you could say that. Like I was saying that in terms of, like, what people went during them times when they saw Pele, how they thought. Like, when we see...
It was Jim Crow, A1. It was he was living in a time where, like, there were colored-only fountains, bro.
Yeah.
Do you think they let Pele drink from the white-only fountain? I don't think so.
I think
he was drinking from Negroes and coloreds only.
Yeah, I think he was drinking from there.
Could you imagine Pele? It's 1958. You think they won the World Cup and he's like, all right, you know what? We're going to go to America. Yeah. No!
Yeah, but
you're not going to America in 1950, 1960. But he was the GOAT still. Like, people at that time were like, no, no, no. I mean, he might be black, but he's good.
Maybe so. I think it's like that today. Obviously, you'll get people who think, yeah, he's good, and some people think, nah, F him. I'm saying, forget about
it. I wonder, do you think some of the hate that he gets today is because he's like the dark-skinned man in the conversation? I'd like to think no.
Yeah, I don't think so. No.
I'm not going to divorce that as a possibility. I'm not going to remove it from the table. Because he is the dark-skinned black man in the conversation of being the GOAT. The other ones are
light-skinned.
Maradona and Messi. That's basically the only other two that people would want to... Okay, Ronaldo, okay. Either one. People might give you either one. But Pele's the only dark-skinned brother in the team. Like,
I would say people would include Ronaldo, you know, Brazilian Ronaldo as a GOAT.
Yeah. That's why I said both of them. I don't know. I would like to think that's not a possibility. But definitely in 1950, 1960, that was part of the conversation.
Yeah, 100%.
But no, I stepped over you, my bad.
It's cool, but I was saying in terms of him doing wild things, it's like how nowadays, or like a couple of years ago, when Ronaldo and Messi were doing wild things, to why these kids of today will think Pelé ain't the GOAT. Messi or Ronaldo are the GOATs because they've seen the wild things. But like what you said, Pelé set trends with the wild things. So if it wasn't for someone like Pelé, you know, some of these things that we're seeing, that like, players wouldn't have got influence on them. But
that's a good way to put it. He set the trend. I like that. The only thing that I didn't see was like, you know what Maradona did against England, or what Messi did against Getafe?
Oh, running from...
I needed them to add one of those. There must be a clip somewhere.
I think
LA dribbling through the whole team. That's the only thing that was missing, to where, like, let's cement this, that this is the GOAT. Like, you're all copying him, even if you don't even know it.
I think there was a similar clip, but he didn't go past that many players. I think he may have gone past one or two players, whereas...
Well, there was one that they put with Ronaldo when he was playing at Barcelona, where he just kind of ran through three people.
Yeah.
But I mean one where you're like dribbling. Yeah, and like, yeah. Just the
Messi or Ronaldo. I mean, Messi or Maradona, my bad.
Yeah, where just like the defenders just look silly. Not that you're beating them with pace, but it's like pace plus dribbling ability, you know? But that was the only thing that was missing.
Yeah, okay. I enjoyed the video, man. I enjoyed the video.
It was good. It was like 2 minutes, but it'll change your perception on like... maybe how you view Pelé. That like, there are some people who've gone so far that no evidence is going to change their mind. Like, Pelé was a farmer. He was playing against shoemakers, and they weren't even real footballers. These were part-time. He was playing against dentists and construction workers, and he was scoring goals. There was no offside rule. The goal was bigger. The ball was smaller. Whatever excuses they want to come up with. But the video's the video.
Yeah, it's a very good video.
The Zidane header thing against Brazil. I was like, Pelé did that? And then there was a clip of Pelé doing that. I was like, oh, shit. Just everyone. I was like, he did this? And then they showed the footage of, oh, shit, he did that.
Even at the Roberto Carlos.
Yo!
Yeah.
The free kicks. I didn't realize he was taking free kicks with 2 feet.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, I'm not that surprised when I think about it. My dad, he bought me a book when I was a kid. It was a comic book. It was a Pelé comic book, because this guy has elite propaganda. So the guy has movies, comic books, it's everything about Pelé, because he understands legacy. But in the comic book, it was like one of the first few pages. And it was Pelé and his dad, and his father was a footballer. And I remember one of the panels.
All right.
His dad was telling him basically, like, because you're right-footed, everybody who's right-footed should be able to shoot with their right.
Yeah.
So his father, who I think was a striker as well, told him that you need to practice with your left. So that was, like, to put that in, like, a children's comic book, that must be something that's really important to him, that, like, his dad told him, train with your left, shoot with your left. You need to perfect your left foot. Your right foot will come along, but you need to play with your left. So in the video, I was looking at like the quote retweets, and people were like, yo, I didn't realize how two-footed he was.
Yeah.
That he was able to do things with right and left. And then it reminded me of that comic book, that like that's something that he worked on a lot, even from as a little kid, because that's something that his dad told him to do. I don't know if I could ever find that comic book. I'm sure it's long lost. But shout out to Pelé's dad. He gets forgotten.
Shout him up.
A1. Thank you. Coming through in the clutch. Episode 250. Is that a big deal? I don't know.
It is, man. It's a big deal. Shout out.
I mean, 250 looks cool. I'm not going for it. Like, I was smiling. Like, 250 looks good.
250, you know, it's you're going strong, man.
Pick you guys up. I don't know.
Big up Double H as well.
Of course. Have Hope will be back next week. Thank you again for coming on. It's your second time, so you are now an official friend of the pod. Your status has been upped with, you know, Forward and Red and those guys. So, you know.
Thanks,
where can people get you online before we dip?
You can get me on Twitter, Ords First. AUDZ1ST. Just follow up. You know, I'm just there just tweeting, you know, retweeting.
A1 has the greatest timeline for Africans and the African diaspora. Put it that way. If you are an African, and I mean that in the broadest sense possible, follow A1. He's a good follow, man. He's a good follow. Like, I don't know where he finds the videos from Africa, Europe, America, South America. Like, he finds them. If it's black people, he'll find them. So follow him. It's a good follow, man. You'll find ratchetness and a whole bunch of stuff. So
sometimes I keep it positive, you know, nice.
Sometimes.
I like to mix it up.
Yeah, so we're on Twitter at Talking Tactics, Facebook Talking Tactics, Instagram the same. If you're listening on Spotify, give us a follow. If you're on Apple Podcasts, subscribe. It's free. Give us a 5-star review, and we'll read it on the show. Shout out to the people who leave reviews, by the way. Yeah, we're on Patreon again. Half Hope and I will find time in the week to talk about movies or whatever else. So check that out. Link is in the description. All the links are in the description. Talking Tactics podcast, sometimes funny, sometimes serious.
Always football.
Indeed. We'll see you guys next week. Peace.
Sports Social Podcast Network.